I'm Sarah Beeny and this is Round the Houses, my podcast all about the homes of the most interesting people I know. Armed with my trusty microphone, I'm going behind closed doors to talk to some of the nation's favourite musicians, TV presenters, comedians and generally fascinating people. Before we get going, I just wanted to thank a few people for all their time and energy. That's my long-suffering family, who spent a very hot and humid afternoon attempting to record all the music for the podcast. That's right, everything you'll hear on the show is made by my sons, all under the age of 15, whipped into shape by my husband. Not literally, please don't call social services. So thank you, Graham, Billy, Charlie, Raffy and Laurie. It's a little rough around the edges, but I'm told that's how podcasts should be. Okay, let's get on with the show.
One, two.
This is the first ever episode and I'm on the road. Well, actually, only in Kent. But it feels a million miles away from London. And I'm here to speak to a truly remarkable man in his truly remarkable home. We're going to Julian Clary's house, which is very exciting because not only is Julian Clary really fabulous, but also my children read his books. Look at that. Look at that beautiful house. Now this used to be Noel Coward's house as well. So there's a dynasty of artistic creatives who've lived here. Look, the sheep opposite. It is a beautiful day, so that does help, but what a beautiful Tudor house.
Hello!
We all know Julian for his groundbreaking comedy and presenting, and even for winning Celebrity Big Brother in 2012. He's also acted in theatre and film and writes children's books, as I mentioned, but also novels for adults as well. Anyway, he's basically done everything, and I can't wait to talk to him about his life and his fabulous house. Hello, wonderful Julian Clary. Thank you very much for letting me come to your fabulous home in Kent.
Well, it's always nice to, I'm always curious to meet people you've seen on the television. And see them close up.
Yes, see if they're really real. Well, I've never seen you in real life.
No.
So that's.
I thought I saw you at Chelsea Flower Show, but it's someone similar.
So this is the outside of your house. Do you always come into the garden first and then go through into the house from the garden?
No, I just happened to be, this is where we were, and I heard your car arrive, so I thought I'd slip you down the back passage.
I want to know about your homes. As a child, where were you brought up?
I was born in Surbiton in a police flat. My father was a policeman.
Oh.
Then when I was about seven, we moved to Teddington, St Mark's Road, and it was one of those 1930s semi-detached, but a lovely sunny house. And I had guinea pigs in the garden. I had the little box room. My sister shared a room and my parents had the other room. And it was the 70s, so we had lots of bright orange marigold curtains and bright orange carpet.
So was it a happy home?
It was happy.
What did your mother do?
My mother was a probation officer. My father was a policeman. So they were sort of, and one was Tory, one was Labour. So they were
quite
fiery.
Exciting.
And an animated relationship, let's call it. But they're also very silly. My mother in particular is very silly, and they're like a double act. My father was kind of would set up the jokes, and I used to have this long journey to school from Teddington to Ealing on the 65 bus, which took like an hour and a half there, hour and a half back.
Oh,
and I used to save up. I used to listen in on conversations on the bus, and then amuse everyone at the dinner table later.
So were you the spoilt one?
I think they would say I was.
Do your sisters think you were?
Yes, but the 70s were tough. When I think back, my parents just worked all the time, and my mother used to come in from work and start peeling potatoes still with her coat on and have a sherry, and I don't know, everyone seemed to be dashing around trying to make ends meet all the time.
What did you think you'd be when you grew up, when you were little?
Well, I wanted to be a vet.
Right.
But soon became apparent that I wasn't any good at the relevant subjects like the sciences. So then I wanted to be a writer, and I like the fact that I've now come back to writing, having been distracted and done comedy and whatever. I'd have said I wanted to be a writer if you asked me when I was about seven or eight.
And so that's what you thought you'd like to be. And how did you end up doing what you did?
So then I went to St. Benedict's School in Ealing, which is a Catholic public school run by Benedictine monks. And I had quite a hard time as an effeminate youth. I didn't fit in. So by the time I left then, went to university, I had something to rebel against. And also one's sexuality was difficult then.
It's kind of interesting to me that when you're a small child, most small children will do anything to be average and fit in. Like, do anything. They want their parents to be average. They want to live in an average house. They want to be averagely high. They want to be averagely... You know, everything. You want
yes.
to be... I think most children desperately want to be bland and grey and just the same as everyone else, at 50% of everything. And yet you had the confidence to say, I don't feel the same, so I'm going to be okay with that.
Yes, we were disdainful of all that normality, and we didn't want to be like the others. I can see why I became a comedian, because you want to stand on stage on your own in a spotlight, be centre of attention and get the reassurance of getting laughs every few seconds, so that satisfies the need.
To be the centre of attention.
Yes.
As well. So your first time, you went to university. Where did you go to university?
I went to Goldsmiths, coming from that awful school, which was kind of stuck in the 40s to that environment where individualism was encouraged and creativity and all of that. It was a real sort of turning point.
Did you live in halls or did you have a flat?
I lived in a student house for a couple of years, and then in those days you could sign on for a council flat as soon as you went to university, so that's what I did. And then I got a hard to let council flat in Kidbrook near Eltham, southeast London. It was a very sweet little one room flat, and you had no bathroom, and in the kitchen there was a kitchen counter, and you would lift it up and there was a bath concealed underneath.
really tiny.
And I liked that. Then I moved to a housing cooperative in Seymour Place near Baker Street.
Did you make a home for yourself or did you just live there?
Well, one room again, and I bought some rice paper blinds and some spray paint and did this sort of wild abstract thing with the spray paint in orange and black and yellow. And then when I left there, I left the blinds behind, and they were still hanging there for about 10 years. Whenever I drove past, you'd see
Amazing.
My blinds. They were rather
probably
good.
Probably worth a fortune.
Well, actually, They've gone now.
Piece of artwork. And so you were there, and then did you buy somewhere?
Yes. Something? Then when I was about 28, I bought a flat in Camden. Mm-hmm. I'd always aspired to live in Camden Town. I think Nick and I went to Camden Market when we were about 15. And I thought, all I want in life is to live in Camden and drive a Citroën 2CV.
Did you get one?
So when I was 28, I did both. I thought I'd arrived.
You'd arrived.
People are funny. You know, people are very varied in Camden, and there's lots of eccentric people, lots of...
Have you seen it changing a lot over
yes,
the time you've been there?
It evolves, but it's still got the same atmosphere.
And when did you get married?
Oh, a year and a half ago.
Oh, gosh, you're newlyweds.
Yes.
You have an amazing wedding.
Still riddled with cystitis.
And how long had you been together before that?
Well, he said yesterday something about 17 years.
Oh, so you rushed into it a bit.
17 years when we met. I think we took a while to circle around each other. Not a very needy relationship, you know. We're quite sort of happy to be in separate places sometimes.
Probably healthy, isn't it?
I have a feeling he's listening through the window.
Well, we'll say lots of nice things.
I have to be careful.
He's not there.
What I say.
And when did you buy this house?
About 11 years ago.
Okay, so you bought it together, did you? Well, kind of at the same time, I'm not saying.
Yes.
I'm not asking your personal finances. I'm just thinking made a choice together.
I'd lived in the same house now in Camden for 24 years. So I don't like letting go of things.
Yeah.
So anyway, Camden is, you know, very urban and noisy, especially where we are. So this is a complete contrast.
And do you think when you started on television, was it an easy journey? Did you feel you'd found where you were meant to be?
Well, but sort of by chance. I thought, oh, this is fun. And you're 4 or 5 years on the circuit. That was a very nice time, and then the sort of transition to television and everything. I thought, well, this...
So you started as a stand-up comic?
Yeah. We were all very eccentric people looking back who didn't fit anywhere else. Me and Joe Brand and Paul Merton, whoever, we were all quite strange. Now that's not a prerequisite. I think, you know, you can... There's a lot of sort of blokes, aren't there?
Yes,
I'm going to be a bloke and I'm talk about going to the pub, and that's fine, but it's just a different setup.
Yes. So we're going to see three or four rooms inside your house, if that's okay. And is there anything you don't want me to see?
No, I did a little sweep round. I don't think there's anything that's going
no
to frighten,
dirty underwear on
frighten
the
horses. No, no lubricant on the desk.
Yes, that would be shocking. So there's no area. Which is the area you hate most in the house?
Oh, there's a room above the kitchen, which is a kind of junk area. Where
it's your dumping ground.
Yes.
Do you have a stuff drawer in it, or a stuff room where...
There's a couple of costume rails. They're covered in sheets because of the dust, and there's a lot of cobwebs around.
You must have an amazing collection of clothes.
Yes, well, they're all up there in that room.
Can we go in there?
You can go in there.
I really want to go in there now. It's the one room you didn't want me to see them. What age is the house?
This bit is the oldest bit. This is like 15th century, I believe. This was all an entrance hall in Noel Coward's day.
So Noel Coward lived here for how long?
About 30 years, from 26 to 56.
So this is a study, which is where you work, all your creations.
Yes.
What are you writing at the moment?
I'm writing the Next Bowles book, which is the fifth one.
Brilliant.
So the fourth one's just come out, and the fifth one is on its way.
Well, how did you get the idea for the Bowles? How long did you have?
Well, that's all from Teddington. So they're all set in Teddington, in the house that I grew up in. The Bowles are the Clarys, really.
except they're not actually animals.
No, but I did have this... I made up a story about my next-door neighbours who were very hairy when I was a child. I was looking out the window and they laughed a lot, and I thought, it would be interesting if there was a family of hyenas living next door. So that's the story I went back to when I started writing.
Oh, so it was your story from your childhood?
Yes.
The Bowles?
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. It's such a brilliant... For anyone who doesn't know about the Bowles, it's such a brilliant story. It's about a family who are actually animals and they have to pretend to be human, and then they take in various other animals and they teach them.
Yeah, they help them to transition.
To transition into sort of human form. This is gorgeous.
Is a very sunny room in the mornings. You get all the sun through here.
So you've got lots and lots of old beams around, and it feels very old. I can see it's been added to over the years. It must be quite small, presumably, originally.
Yeah, a little farmhouse, just this bit and that room and the two... It would have been two rooms upstairs then.
Leaded windows.
Yeah. And when I had those replaced, I kept the original glass because I thought, you know, they sounded slightly distorted. And I thought, Noel Coward's looked through that window. I must keep that bit of glass.
Is it listed? It must be.
It is, yes.
What, listed grade one?
Two, I think, I hope.
But that's not so bad.
No.
Because it can be very complicated. Well, look, it's amazing. You've got a flying owl.
Yes.
How wonderful, an enormous statue of a flying owl on your rather gorgeous desk. Is this a story behind this?
Well, I was doing panto in Plymouth and I saw it in a junk shop, and it was really expensive. So I was there for 6 weeks and I went in every week and beat him down. And then I got it to the price I wanted.
And is this where you write, this
desk? This is where I write, yes.
And so this is a big old partner's desk, isn't it?
It is,
really?
Yeah.
And so you always sit that side?
I sit that side.
Lovely. I love a desk like this. I sort of think your soul will be more creative in a desk.
But I sometimes think it's such a big thing. Wouldn't it be nice to get rid of it and have a little...
No.
Or ultra-modern?
No, certainly
no.
not.
Okay.
No, well, if you do, I'll have it.
Okay.
No, that's gorgeous. Brilliant, I love it. So have you collected all this furniture together? Are you a collector?
Well, when I moved here, I sold a flat in Brighton, and I also had a flat in Mallorca, and I sold that as well. I bought all the stuff from both of those here.
Hang on, so you had a flat in Brighton, a flat in Mallorca.
Yes.
A home in London.
Yeah.
Was that quite exhausting, having all those different places you had to look after?
It was, and I thought this is madness, because I didn't really care for Brighton. I found it too like London. in terms of where am I going to go for my weekend? Oh, I'll go to somewhere just as crowded by the sea. And I got fed up with the airport, and my sister lives in Mallorca, so that's why I was going.
Okay, there. So there's a sense about Mallorca makes sense.
Yes, but it was just the effort. And also with the dog, obviously he couldn't come to Mallorca every weekend. So I thought, oh, I'll get rid of those and I'll... And Paul O'Grady lives down the road. He told me about this house. So that's nice. What kind of sparked the idea.
So it was on the market and he said, hey, this
yes.
is a good one.
And very dilapidated then. It was all...
Oh, was it? So you've done lots done of work.
Yes, windows, ceiling, floor, central heating, plumbing, electrics. So that sort of...
So is this the first one you've done? Had you done other properties?
No, this is the first one. And things like The Little Princess, every time I did a voiceover, I thought, oh, that'll be a new window. I had some sort of motivation for everything.
Thank you, Little Princess.
Yes.
So you carried on doing those and then did a bit by bit?
Or bit by bit,
how long
yes.
did it take to do?
It took about 10 years.
Oh, a really long project.
Yeah, so because it's a funny house and I couldn't actually work out what function I wanted each room to have until I'd been here for a while.
Yes.
It would have been more sensible, and also I couldn't afford it, but if I'd said I'll do the whole thing in one go.
This is your sitting room or drawing room, do you call it?
Oh, we call it sitting room.
I like the word drawing room.
Do
sounds
you?
It's a little bit pretentious, but I always think it's such yes. a calm word.
I've got a friend who calls his sitting room his salon, which is one like step that. Beyond.
Yes. So this is your sitting room. And amazing orchids over here.
Yes.
Are they new, or did you manage to keep them alive to get that big?
They're faux.
Oh, I'm going to poke them.
They're
that's
not real.
Amazing, aren't
as
they?
You get closer. No, but I thought that's just the thing.
I don't think you should have told me that.
I know. Well, I was going to keep quiet, but yes. And they're not real either.
But oh.
Because I'm not here all the time.
You know, these are fabulous as well.
This ochre faux flowers. I'm obsessed.
What? Is that a faux flower maker, ochre?
Well, ochre do furniture and anything householdy.
Oh, right, that ochre, yes.
O-K-A, you know.
Yes.
And I rather went to town on their...
They're rather wonderful.
Because I didn't want to come down from London and find that the house was full of dead flowers and that awful rancid smell.
Yes, yes. So, that sort of rotting.
Now, as long as you dust them, they're all right.
Fantastic. So who plays? Someone must play. Do you have friends that come over?
I've got, yes. Ian Shaw, the jazz pianist, lives down the road.
So he
comes and plays. I think it needs tuning. I used to play, but my talent... is yet to be discovered in that department.
And this is Noel Coward's piano.
Well, it's mine now.
Mine.
But this is the piano that I have all the provenance. This is the piano that was here in the 20s and 30s, which miraculously became available. And I thought, well, I can't say no. This is where it belongs.
Yes. And so it came home.
So it came home. And this would have been where he wrote Mad About the Boy and whatever other tunes. Sail Away and all those songs written
so
on this piano.
So have you done a lot of research on Noel Coward?
Yes,
in
when I came here, I was slightly obsessed with the whole story of... So he was hugely successful at a very young age. And when he was 26, when he bought this house, he was like the highest paid playwright in the world, I think. And he had all these parties here with, you know, people like... Laurence Olivier and...
Oh, I didn't realise he was so well connected.
That's, oh, yeah, he was the talk
was
of the town.
Absolutely, like, the thing.
And had, you know, two or three hit plays on in the West End. He was a real superstar. But he was also gay, you know, in 1926. And my story I've made up for myself, and I wrote a novel about, called Briefs Encountered, was that this is where he had a lover called Jack Wilson...
Which is impossible to get your head round now, as I just can't get my head round, but it was illegal.
Yes, highly illegal. And
which is so bizarre.
So where would you want to be to have a happy gay time? And I figured, well, you'd buy a house in the middle of nowhere where you're not going to be observed. And,
yes. But because he was a prolific writer and he was a show businessman and... Everybody knew he was gay. I don't really understand. I can't imagine living in a country, and we're lucky in this country that it isn't illegal. And it is still amazingly not frowned upon in other countries, which is amazing. But I kind of think, I can't imagine what it would be like to... Did people just ignore it, do you think? Just say it was so silly?
In his circles, I think it would have been, you know... Just ignored. In the world of showbiz, it was fine. And he was very discreet as well.
Maybe that was the thing. You had to just be quite discreet about it.
Yes, he wouldn't, you know, walk down Shaftesbury Avenue holding hands. But there must have been the fear of arrest. And, you know, it did go on.
It did. With people being made sort of, you know, kind of people wanting to show that they were... Don't mean scapegoat. What do I mean? What's the word? Like a principled...
Yes, and disgraced and all the rest of it.
Anyway.
So he trod that fine line, but...
But successfully, because he was never disgraced. He died old age.
He never came out. Well, he died at 73, age of 73. I'm fascinated by all that. And so I think this is where it all went on.
And so this area here... was probably quite... He would have known people around here and had quite an artistic community, presumably.
There was quite a lot of gay and lesbian chaps and chapesses living around here. His set designer, whose name was Gladys Calthrop, she lived up the hill. Yeah, there was a sort of community and they would all have parties.
And is there quite a good community here now? Do you know many of your neighbours?
Yes. Paul O'Grady's up the top of the hill and Ian Shaw, the jazz pianist, lives in Hyde and he comes and plays the piano.
And are you all friends?
Yeah, they're my friends. And I've got Mick Kimpton, who's a notable florist. He lives not far away. So, yes.
So there's quite a kind of... I don't want to say showbiz, because it's actually more media... it's a kind of very artistic area, this part. I mean, there's lots of people who are very artistic and they're in the arts and they understand the arts. Would you say
yes.
That's right?
I don't give the wrong impression that we all sit around being arty all the time.
That's quite a nice impression, so give it to me anyway.
I have non-artistic friends as well.
Okay.
But it's very pleasant.
But being surrounded, having quite a lot of creative people in an area, I think, adds a nice extra dimension. I mean, obviously you want people who understand about farming, and then if you just have farmers, that's quite nice to have a bit of people who are creative and have farmers and have... So you want a bit of everything, don't you, to
yes.
make it interesting?
Yes.
It's a very calm house, isn't it?
It is, although it's ghostly. There's been goings on.
Really? I don't believe in ghosts.
Well, no, I don't really. But... They do say that if you play the piano, you'll smell cigarette smoke, and that's Noel. Well, in bed last night, I suddenly smelled cigarettes. It was a funny night last night. I went and stood in the bathroom and looked out the window, and there was a car parked down the road. And I thought, it's a funny thing at 2 o'clock in the morning. So there was that put me on edge, and then the lights started flickering. And then the next door's alarm went off. And so, yes, I'm not frightened of ghosts, but there is something goes on. And also, my great aunt Tess died recently, and I brought her cuckoo clock here, and I hung it next door in the dining room, and it's on a nice strong hook. You know, there's no way it could fall off, but it did, and it's all smashed. So I think Noel didn't like the cuckoo clock, because when I first came here, I had lots of modern art, which are these great big abstracts which I hung on the wall, and they, one by one, all crashed to the ground.
Oh, he didn't like that either.
He didn't like them, no.
I always think the irony of ghosts is that most people, there will have been more people who died horrible, grisly deaths in sort of two up, two down terraces in sort of inner city Manchester, say. And those places are never haunted. They always go to a big castle or some amazing house like this, and people go to big houses and they go, oh, now this is definitely haunted, where actually... Everyone was loaded in those massive houses and they would have had a lovely time. It wouldn't have been at all angsty at all that
no,
day.
No, no.
So I sort of think that's what makes me think I can't believe ghosts are true. But I quite like the idea that Noel Coward is sort of floating around like Blythe Spirit.
Well, I've had people here, a woman called Chrissy Eiley, who's a journalist, but she's also a sort of ghosty diviner. And she went through the whole house and there were four ghosts here, one of whom was Noel, one of whom was Jack.
Jack Wilson.
Yes, his lover.
Yes. Gosh, so they were both here, she said. And who were the other two?
A 17th century washerwoman who's just in the kitchen and a confused youth in an upstairs bedroom.
Oh.
And when I did my research, there's a pond over there and he was a lovelorn. He was in love with a maid from the village and he drowned himself in that pond, so that's him.
Oh, gosh, that's quite a suspicious stance, Andy. Yes, that's scary. So, where are we on to next? I want to see your wardrobe.
Okay, well, I'll take...
I'm dying to see all your wonderful clothes.
I'll take you. I like this house in that there are no corridors, so one room just flows on from the next.
I love that. Very low ceiling. Yeah. How many times have you banged your head?
5 times on the day I moved in, and never since. Come through the kitchen. I'll take you upstairs to my shameful room. Here's the kitchen. Here's my husband slaving over a bit of sea bass.
So with a knife in hand. That's wonderful. So is this, what, are you cooking lunch then?
Yes, we're having pan-fried sea bass and a salad.
Who's the cook? Is it normally you?
We're both really bad cooks.
Oh.
Yes.
This is looking very impressive.
He's northern, so everything is incinerated.
Yes. Oh, and this is great. So the stairs are painted cream with pink dot. Oh, sorry, stamping on your toe. Why the pink dots up the stairs?
Well, this is the Lee Bowery staircase, because I played Lee Bowery in Boy George's musical Taboo some years ago. Great. And Lee Bowery was a sort of living art Australian. Anyway, one of my costumes was a suit with big dots on, but also makeup with big dots. So I just thought, dots up the staircase. I'll call it the Lee Bowery staircase.
Love it.
It'll be something to talk about visiting.
Yes, yes, just in case you're really bored and can't think of anything to say. That's a relief.
So this is the room I didn't want you to see, but
no,
come on in.
Kindly let me in.
I haven't done anything up here because I can't stand up in this room.
No, it's very, very low ceiling at the top of these stairs. Is this all there is up here?
I think it's the old servants' hall, maybe.
Were they very
Someone short said, servants? I expected. They would sit
here and wait. Less food.
Wait, but it's got a nice view across the Romney Marsh, look.
Have you ever thought you'd move your desk up here and write up here? I'd love to write up here.
Would you? But what about the smells of sea bass coming up the stairs?
Yes, that is true. Well, look at those costumes. That's amazing.
These are all the things I will never wear again, but I don't quite know what to do with.
Oh, they're fabulous.
I know.
And every single one's got a story. Which is your favourite?
That was lovely. That was a big purple velvet, well, it still is, a purple velvet coat.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And, you know, back in the day, in the 90s, when you did TV, they had much bigger budgets and you would get a handmade suit and a shirt and shoes and cufflinks and a tie.
Look at these amazing shiny trousers. They're fabulous. Look at those.
And the lining on that, look. That
oh, isn't that gorgeous?
Is that Oswald Boateng?
Yes, I have got my glasses on.
I haven't either.
Can't see. Was it you that kind of thought, I'm just going to dress in clothes that make people think? Or was it just because you liked shiny things?
No, I definitely wanted to be noticed and I wanted to be glamorous. And it was a time when people were wearing their T-shirt and jeans on stage and that was all part of the reaction to the old school comedy. But right. I saw a gap in the market. I thought, well, no one's dressing up. So
it was quite premeditated in a way. You thought, oh, this is who I can be.
Yes, and I wanted to wear lots of makeup, and that's just what I wanted to do. That was my idea of
at the time. You wore this on stage and on telly, and when you were at home, did you wear a
T-shirt? No, I didn't. No, people imagined.
I don't know. I wonder.
Well, that was the difference between me and people like Lee Bowery and Boy George and all that lot. Who they were dressed up to go out. To the nightclubs.
Yeah.
Whereas I would dress up, do my show, then put my ripped jeans on and then go
to a nightclub.
Yes. So it was different.
So it was absolute just for the show business that
yes,
yours
it was.
It wasn't who you were in your soul.
No,
it was definitely.
Yes, on stage was one thing and then off stage was another. Come up this way.
Well, thank you. To me, it's like how show business should be.
I think so.
Whereas I think now people take it, it's changed, hasn't it, a lot. People take it very seriously in a way.
Yes, because
the wrong way.
I always wanted to say nothing of any significance, you know. It's all just sort of buggery jokes and oral sex. I didn't want...
Is there anything you said that you really wish you hadn't said?
Oh, I expect so. Well, that is what we call the children's room.
Do you have lots of children coming?
Well, my nephews and nieces now have children of their own, so that a couple of times a year we fill the house with...
Oh, great. What's your proudest moment of what you've done? What's the thing that you think, yeah, that was brilliant, I'm really pleased with myself about that?
For me, it was publishing my first novel. That felt like a big, proper thing to, okay. grown-up thing to have done. That's my bedroom behind you there.
Yeah, lovely. And it's painted red, gorgeous red, sort of orangey red. And I see your dog... It sleeps up here as well.
But he goes to his bed until he thinks we're asleep, then he gets on. And last night it was so hot in here. After I got up in the night and saw the man lurking outside in his car, we had the windows open. I said, someone's going to break in. So I came and closed the windows and laid here worrying.
Oh no!
Then there was this
sleepless night.
The smell of cigarettes, which is the ghost of Noel.
Oh gosh, you've been up all night.
Then Ian got cross because I'd shut the windows and he went downstairs to the spare bedroom there. And so, yes.
Oh dear.
There's a little insight into our domestic traumas. And
sounds an exhausting night. You had a flat in Brighton. Have you, and a flat in Mallorca. Have you ever owned anywhere else?
No, I've stayed in each of them quite a long time because such a business selling and buying, isn't it?
Yes,
it's all so stressy. Oh no, I did make a mistake. I moved from Camden to Holloway once.
Oh.
And the day I moved into that house, I thought this is a mistake. And I put it back on the market a week later. So that's sort of erased from my memory.
A week later, that's amazing. So you knew, you bought it, moved in and thought, oh no, I hate it.
I did, absolutely hated it.
What did you hate about it?
It was a sort of gothic... I hated being in Holloway. I have to live in that square mile of Camden.
Right, that's where you are. That's
yes,
where you belong.
I felt that my sanity depended on it.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It's a beautiful home and fascinating. What a great story. Thank you very much indeed.
It was lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you. I'm so delighted by Julian and his stories of hanging out with Noel Coward's ghost at home. Amazing. Thank you for listening to the first episode of Round the Houses. If you've enjoyed it, make sure you subscribe. You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you usually listen to podcasts. And definitely don't miss the next episode.
I've had one person who's actually figured out where I live. And they've knocked on my door. So
like a super fan?
Yeah, and she's
oh my
like,
God, do you have?
She came from America as well. Yeah.
Superstar YouTuber and currently Strictly favourite Joe Sugg talked about where his extraordinary career came from and where it could be going to, whilst showing me around his rather amazing penthouse. You wouldn't believe where he baths. Thanks so much to Julian, and thanks to the producers Matt Hill and Lucy Dearlove at Rethink Audio, and thanks to all of you for listening. See you soon!